I've been asked if I would share just one or two of the experiences that we have had working at Hellgate Station in New York. And for those of you that may be unfamiliar, it was at the height of a career in organized crime that I came to know Jesus Christ. Under the ministry of Billy Graham, in the latter part of 1949. The days that followed were quite stormy. For 8 years that followed, I devoted most of my time to speaking in colleges, high schools, churches, civic organizations. And then in early 1958, I thought that I would like to conduct an experiment and see if a person could somehow reach and redirect the lives of young people in the inner city. I was particularly concerned about New York City and the teenagers involved in gangs. I thought that if maybe you could reach the leadership of some of these gangs, that in turn they might be influential in the lives of others. The early days of this venture were stormy, quite difficult. We were bombed, had our place set afire, suffered losses that ran into thousands of dollars in thefts, shot at, tempted again and again to quit, but greatly concerned for these kids and wondering if there wasn't some way, somehow, that a guy could reach them. Ten years have passed since this work began. It's no longer the work of just one man, but a number of dedicated people that love the Lord and in their lives attempt to show Him to others. And out of the experience of these 10 years, if I were to single out just a single story, it would be hard to pick one. I think of one little boy that the dean of discipline in the school just across the street from our operation asked if I wouldn't spend some time with him. Not that he was bad, but as his mother described him, he was the only good boy she had left. Six others were deeply involved in narcotics as junkies or users, or involved in gang activity. And this mother, in almost broken heart, with broken heart, wondered if we wouldn't invest a little time in her boy, the only good one she had left. I'll never forget the boy, because the first time I saw him, I had just cleaned out the basement in this tenement building that we occupy. A florist years before had occupied this storefront, and most of the junk cleared out of the basement was remains of materials he'd used. In the midst of it was a Christmas tree, and this was just about the Christmas season. This was one of these little collapsible Christmas trees, and it was terribly dusty. The little gold balls on it were heavily caked with dust, and I tossed it on the top of the heap. And this little kid came by and said, "Hey, mister, can I have that Christmas tree?" I said, "But it's all dusty and dirty. You wouldn't want that." He said, "But if we don't have this one, we won't have any." When I told him he could have it, delighted, he went down the street dragging it behind him to make it the family Christmas tree. As we came to know this boy better, we were impressed by what happens when you invest a little time, a little of God's love. He came to know Jesus Christ largely through our Sunday school program. And the transformation was obvious in many ways, not the least of which was the fact that his schoolwork started to improve. In fact, he graduated at the head of his class and was voted by the faculty as the boy most likely to succeed. He became the president of our Sunday school class, a class of about 125 children. I guess it was about a year later, one hot summer night, tired, I was headed home. Stopped for a signal. And suddenly the back door of the station wagon opened. And two boys jumped in the car. One was the boy I refer to. We called him Santi. His name was Santos Lopez. When Santi jumped in the car, he had along with him his brother Goldie. I knew Goldie was the head of one of the dreaded gangs, dreaded because they were often high on narcotics and had quite a volume of weapons, number of weapons. Santi went on to tell me that a rival gang was gunning for Goldie. Said, "I know you could help him, Mr. Jim." Would you spend a little time with him and would you try and cool it with the other gang? Because I was weary, I asked him if I could meet him the next night. And they agreed that they would meet me at a given time and place. I was on my way in that next evening when I got a call on the two-way radio. There had been a shooting on 117th Street at 2nd Avenue. By the time I arrived, it was too late to do anything. This boy lay dead in the street. It wasn't Goldie. It was Santi. And the headlines of the papers the next day screamed the story. Slay wrong boy in gang war. It was kind of a helpless and hopeless feeling. I went to comfort the mother and the family. They asked if I would take the funeral. Perhaps it was one of the more difficult tasks in the course of those days. And I kept thinking, if I had only taken the time the night before, one of the last things that Sandy had said was, well, with a shrug of his shoulders, if we don't see you tomorrow night, I'll see you in Sunday school, and I'll bring Goldie with me. The next Lord's Day, of course, Sandy was gone, and all of it keenly in the class, but my heart was touched when I saw Santy's mother, his father, and his six brothers come to class. The Lord used the message of that day to reach into the lives of these rough boys. The entire family came to know Jesus Christ. One of the boys is a minister of the gospel today. Many times, magazines that have written the story of YDI, or youth development, have told the stories of success. We've had just as many failures, if not more. And in looking back, you think of the things perhaps you should have done that you didn't do. Some of you remember reading in Reader's Digest, it was Saturday Evening Post, the story of Lou Marsh a couple of years ago. Lou Marsh was a divinity student that came to work for the city of New York under the youth board. The only time in the history of the city when a youth worker was killed as the direct action on the part of a gang, so the story said. I won't forget that night. I was just getting ready for bed. Almost completely undressed. When the phone rang, the police department asked if I would come and help them on this case. They weren't sure of the four perpetrators. I went down, spent the rest of the night working on it. We finally came up with the four boys. One was James Griffin. Another, Teddy Shepherd, Steve Naranjo, Tony Blondet. There isn't time to relate the whole of the story, but we had reason to believe that if these boys weren't helped in this situation, they'd be sent to prison for life. There was evidence that indicated the four boys might be guilty of manslaughter, but not necessarily murder. Our board of directors decided to defend the boys. I'm sure that it brought the correct story to light, although the boys were sentenced to prison. We weren't trying to get them off, we just wanted to make sure that the whole story was told. Public sentiment was against them. Kind of the attitude, throw the book at them. Many people could not understand why we even went to the trouble to defend them. I'll never forget one man that said, "Don't you know, kids like these, they're unreachable." During their terms in prison, we went to see them again and again, encouraged them in studies, helped them as often as we could in their course of studies. When later they were released from prison, we worked with them individually in remedial and tutorial work. Again, I wish there were time to tell the whole of the story. Sufficient to say that out of the four, part of the story is discouraging. James Griffin is today married, settled, working, doing very well. Has made a profession of faith, has not shown a great deal of evidence that Christ really controls his life. Some, we can't be the judge. Teddy Shepherd appeared to be making good progress, finished school, got a job with a market chain, but then he just couldn't take it because his wife refused to unite again with him and took their children. So one night the word came. Teddy Shepherd was dead. With broken heart and grief, he took an overdose of narcotics and took his life. And then you wonder, is it really worth it to invest your time and see all your hopes dashed against the rocks? But out of the four, two others, Steve Naranjo, Tony Blondet. Tony is in his second year at King's College in Briarcliff Manor, New York, making all A's and B's. Steve, just a semester behind him, is doing almost as well. And the thing that thrills you, if you spend time talking to them, and of course those of you that do not know King's, it's one of our fine Christian colleges. The thing that thrills you is the apparent life and vitality, the presence of Jesus Christ that shows forth so beautifully. And you know as you talk to them that, hopeless as it may seem at times, Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, even though that sinner may be the chief. And then I think of Al. The police brought him to us. He He spent 9 out of 22 years of his life in prison. The last 6 months in solitary confinement because he started a prison riot. During the period of time in solitary confinement, he determined that he would build his body to the place where with his bare hands he could take on any cop. And continually, day and night, he worked on it until his physique, well, just a chunk of steel, just solid muscle. When the police brought him to us, they said he won't be on the streets long unless somebody helps him. I took him in, gave him housing, cooked for him, cared for him. Over a period of time, eventually, won a hearing for the gospel of Jesus Christ. In the meantime, he was so determined to pursue these athletic endeavors, he wanted to fight. And I asked Bobby Gleason if he'd train him as a boxer. And he said he would. Soon he was doing so well, they wanted to run him in Madison Square Garden. It was about that period of time that Ingemar Johansson came for the title match. Needed a sparring partner. They took on Al. He was a great sparring partner until he flattened Ingemar Johansson. They fired him. But Al went on in the boxing game, did very well in his garden fights. Some say he would have easily become the heavyweight champ. He had all the ability. But in the midst of this, he came to truly know Jesus Christ. I'll never forget one Christmas. During this period of time, he was working in a meat plant, pushing around big carcasses of beef. And he confided one night that it just made him sick the way the guys took the name of the Lord in vain. It was all he could do to restrain himself. Because every time he heard it, he wanted to just deck them. He said, you know, the other day I got so mad I decided I better get away, and I went up to the locker room and I went back in a corner and I took out my New Testament and I started to read. And I read about the Lord and his birth. Now he came because he loved me. He said, you know, I just felt so overcome with his love. And I wished that I could have some way to tell God how much it meant. And he said, I just couldn't find the words, but I took my little New Testament and I kissed it. And I just hoped that God would know how much it meant. Al is married. He gave up the fight game. Felt that it wasn't honoring to the Lord. Today, he serves as coach of our football team. Has a full-time job as an athletic instructor for one of the local schools. Time would fail to tell the story of many of these. Contrary to what a lot of people think, we're not working with great numbers, just a few but we try to do a job in depth. I plan to spend the rest of my life in this square mile because I believe there is an answer. Not in poverty programs and the expenditure of countless millions of dollars of government money. But I believe there is an answer. And really, I believe the problem is not the neglect or negligence on the part of the government. But the real problem is the neglect on the part of the church. Perhaps it's all summed up in the words of another. I simply argue that the cross be raised again at the center of the marketplace, as well as on the steeple of the church. I am recovering the claim that Jesus Christ was not crucified in a cathedral between two candles, but on a cross between two thieves, on the town garbage heap, at a crossroad so cosmopolitan that they had to write his title in Hebrew, Latin, and Greek. At the kind of place where cynics talk smut and thieves curse and soldiers gamble, because that is where he died and that is what he died about. And that is where churchmen ought to be. And what churchmen should be about.